go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the
2007
NFL
season.
Yeah,
go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome, everybody, inside the playbook yet again for another Thursday here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with you, actually out on location today, which is why we're out on the telephone. I think if you listened to yesterday's program, you probably know that I'm out doing some college basketball tonight, so we're actually getting ready to head over to the Wachovia Center in Philadelphia for the Big East SEC Invitational tonight, so that's why we're doing it this way here this afternoon. So apologize for some of the scratchiness in the audio, but hey, you do what you gotta do. Let's see. Coming up now, Bill Belichick, we'll hear from him a little bit later on in the program. We've also got plenty of locker room sound today. We'll go inside the locker room, and I think, I'm sure, we're gonna get some reaction, at least somewhere, other than what Rodney Harrison had to say about Anthony Smith's guarantee that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to win this game on Sunday. So be interesting to hear what the Patriots locker room might have to say, and that'll come up in the second hour of the program, as will ESPN's Russell Baxter, NFL research coordinator, who joined us normally on Thursdays. He'll be with us shortly on the program as well. So all that is upcoming on the show, so we've got some good stuff for you. Now, a lot of things have transpired since we spoke yesterday, not the least of which would be the fact that Steeler defensive back Anthony Smith opened up his yap. And, well, I'm just going to briefly recap. I won't bore you with it because I know you're probably already aware of it. But he did say, his quote was, "People keep asking me if we're ready for the Patriots. They should be asking if they're ready for us." So he says, "We're going to win. Yeah, I can guarantee a win as long as we come out and do what we got to do." Sounds to me like that's a little bit of a hedge already. He says, "Both sides of the ball are rolling, and if our special teams come through for us, we've got a good chance to win." Sounds like he's already hedging his bets yet again. Of course, the best part of all of this has to do with the fact, and you know that the Patriots are masters of the, you know, taking the bulletin board material and turning it around into their favor. But the great response obviously came from Rodney Harrison, who, if you didn't hear, he was asked by Fox Sports Radio about the comments, and his question was, "Who was it?" And, of course, then the response was, "It was Anthony Smith." And he said, "Never heard of him." So, quite frankly, I think that's the appropriate response. I can't think of a better answer. And you know that there are guys in the locker room now that will be stewing over that one just a little bit. So any kind of a motivational ploy that comes about, if players are going to be stupid and they're going to open up their mouths, which, as you all know, some of these guys are certainly capable of doing a lot of times, then that's fine. You can't stop people from being stupid. And so the Patriots will gladly take advantage of that and, frankly, use any edge they can get right now, because I know that there are a lot of other people that seem to think that the Patriots could be in trouble again on Sunday. Witness, when the line opened up on this game Tuesday morning, the first line that I saw, and I'm sure it stayed like this high very long, but the first line I saw was 14 points. I didn't think there'd be any way in the world it'd be 20 plus like the last couple of weeks were, because both, obviously, as we know, Philadelphia and Baltimore came very close to winning the football game. And then it shrunk pretty quickly to about 12.5, and now it's at 10.5. So that indicates, obviously, there are a lot of other people who are doubting right now, and a lot of people who are putting money on the Steelers, as the line has come down to 10.5, and there probably will continue to be. It wouldn't shock me at all to see the betting line for this game go down under 10 points before kickoff on Sunday afternoon. So I think, again, that's even somewhat of a motivational ploy. Do I expect a close game? Sure. I'm not in the camp that this is going to be a blowout. Quite frankly, we discussed this on the program yesterday, if you missed it, but yeah, there are several flaws right now on this team that we sort of identified. I'm sure that you've identified. And the Patriots are identifying as we speak. They're out there practicing this afternoon after having yesterday off. So I think what the difference lies in here is whether or not there's confidence in whether the Patriots can improve themselves enough and adjust their defensive shortcomings in particular to where an opposing offense doesn't take advantage of it. We're getting the same kind of football team on Sunday, basically, what we saw the Baltimore Ravens do on Monday. A team that's physical, a team that likes to run the football, a team that likes to possess the ball, and yet they've got better wide receivers than do the Ravens. They've got a better quarterback than do the Ravens. Better quarterback than either one of the last two teams, obviously. So with that being said, I can see where somebody would make that leap of faith and say, well, I think the Steelers will be that much better than the other two guys, and therefore the Patriots are in real trouble on Sunday. So really what it boils down to is what the Patriots can control. Can the Patriots slow down the Steelers enough? Can the Patriots create other opportunities for themselves on offense in an effort to try to kick back into gear? So that's really where Sunday's game boils down. Love to hear your comments. Webradio at patriots.com, the email address again, webradio at patriots.com. So fire it off on not only what you think of Anthony Smith and his bold prediction, maybe even Rodney Harrison and his response to that, but obviously we need your predictions for Sunday's game. And don't be afraid to step on the other side, because quite frankly, after thinking about it during yesterday's show, I was coming to the conclusion, I think, that maybe the streak does end this week. I'm hedging on that a little bit, but again, basically going on what we saw the last 2 weeks and knowing that the Steelers come in ready to roll. I still can't get over the fact that the Steelers team lost to the New York Jets. That one very fact keeps me from saying, well, I think the Steelers are going to win. The Patriots are at home. The Patriots have shown that they can not only win the route in convincing fashion, but they can also win the close games. They can win the games that they really weren't supposed to win, like last Monday night, for example. So, again, until we see it happen, until we're convinced that it can happen, I think I have to stay with the Patriots. But right now I'm going to say that the Steelers will cover what the current spread is at 10.5, kind of like the PFW guys were talking about. I know Tom says that he thinks the Steelers are going to win a close one. And frankly, I think his reasoning is actually sound for once or twice. I understand his reasoning, and I'm buying into it. I just don't think that they'll have enough to get over the top. And I'm looking at, I don't even think it's going to be that high scoring, to be quite honest with you. I'm looking at about right now 27-20. That's about what I'm thinking. About 27-20 Patriots is somewhere in that measure for Sunday. So if you have your thoughts on the game and your predictions, webradio at patriots.com is where you can send them off. Couple of tidbits from just observations and reading several stories today and trying to kind of get a gauge of where, you know, the thought process is. First of all, I want to readdress Baltimore for just a moment, just because of the significance of what I believe this particular story means about the Patriots and where they stand overall in the, in fandom here, people who follow the National Football League throughout the country. You've probably seen this story, and I believe it's also posted on this website elsewhere, but the Patriots' win over the Ravens on ESPN Monday night was seen by more than 17.5 million viewers, according to Nielsen. So that made it the most watched program in cable television history. Well, that's extraordinary when you consider that a political debate and a Disney product were actually the top two most watched cable television programs in history prior to this Monday night. I think that's actually extraordinary. Patriots right now have the two highest rated programs of any kind since the 2007 and 2008 television season began on September the 24th, the new TV season beginning on September 24th of this year. The 24-20 win over the Colts earned better than a 20 rating on CBS, which is the highest of any TV program of any kind on any channel this year. And then the second highest rated program of this television season is the win over the Dallas Cowboys back on October the 14th, which got an 18 national rating on CBS as well. And then you back this up with the 17.5 million viewers on cable television alone for Monday Night Football on ESPN. All right, so what does this mean? Well, let's break it down just a little bit. Let's state the obvious. It means that the Patriots are eminently popular, but that doesn't mean that they're likable. Now, I've made this contention weeks ago, and I think we brought it up again last week. And I know I brought a touchdown it again a little bit yesterday. So this may be old news. But what it does is it underscores that even though there may be an outward hatred against the Patriots, fact is that people are tuned into this team for one reason and for one reason alone. They want to see history made. Now, maybe they're rooting against the Patriots. Maybe they want to see the Patriots bubble burst, because I'm sure that the Patriots, and I think the media has largely done a pretty good job of vilifying the Pats and turning them in from, you know, the great Patriots of 2001 to the enemy here in 2007. But I think, you know, the Patriots are also partly to blame for that, because quite frankly, when you keep winning, and you keep pounding people, and you make no bones about this is what we do, this is who we are, and I really don't care about anybody else. The kind of the attitude that, you know, the Patriots have and Coach Belichick has and everything, well, then you're naturally going to alienate some people. If you're not friendly, you're going to alienate people. That's only human nature. So in that regard, I think it's easier to see why the Patriots are, shall we say, not liked. And so people want to tune in to see a team try to knock them off. Or, and I'm sure this is a much smaller faction, but this is also, I think, very much out there. There are NFL fans that are historians of the game who are just fans of professional football, and they realize that they have a chance here to witness something this year that they may not have ever seen in their lifetimes, and they may never see again in their lifetimes, and they want to know. They want to see. They want to be able to tell someone, hey, I saw this happen. Now, unless you can physically and mentally remember the 1972 Miami Dolphins, you fall in that category. You weren't a part of it. You weren't around for it. You didn't follow it. You might have been too young, whatever. But this is your chance to grab a part of NFL history, just like fans who remember the 1972 Miami Dolphins remember them going 17-0 and say, oh yeah, I remember them watching them play. You know, they, and this great team, you know, Mercury Morris, Bob Greasy, Jim Kick, Larry Zonka, you know, Paul Warfield, all, you know, Dick Bonacani, all the great players that are on that team. And so now you have a chance some 35 years later to have history sort of repeat itself. Add to that the fact that this is now an era in which the salary cap allegedly evens things out and allegedly creates parity in the league, and you still have a team that dominates in many ways like the Patriots do, well, obviously you're going to get a lot of interest. So it doesn't come as a surprise that the Patriots are right there at the top of the most popular teams of all time, because there is it's love me, hate me, just don't ignore me. And that's exactly what's happening with these Patriots right now. So maybe, 17.5 million viewers watching the game, maybe, 13 or 14 of them rooting against the Patriots outside of New England, maybe. And then, you know, of course, the little six-state faction of fandom that we have here in New England, and, you know, little scattered pockets of fans all over the country, wherever you may be listening today, all over the world, as a matter of fact, rooting for this football team, well, you kind of count into that total. So I wanted to bring that up because, you know, it's rare that a sports event becomes the top-rated cable television show of all time. Even Super Bowls. Of course, Super Bowls don't appear on cable television, but even Super Bowls don't normally generate that kind of one-time audience if you prorated it to cable. 17.5 million people on cable TV is an extraordinary number. The previous high was 17.2 million for a cable program. That was the High School Musical on Disney Channel this past summer. And the previous high before that was a political debate back in, 1993 or 1994. So you can see that, you know, that's a lot of time between the last time that political debate took place and the Disney Channel musical this past summer. That's a lot of time passing before you got up into this 17 million range audience again on cable TV, and then you have a sports event top that as well. So that, to me, I mean, when you get good ratings in cable TV, that tells me that, you know, that would be an extraordinary rating if it were on one of the broadcast networks like CBS, Fox, or NBC, you know, at the current time that, you know, house NFL games. So the interest is there. The cable rating is there. But let's just say the love for the Patriots may not be. And that's going to continue. So I there's no doubt that it doesn't surprise me, you know, now that the Patriots have one more nighttime game still to go. It's the last game of the year when they go on the NFL Network against the New York Giants. The Patriots, there's no doubt they would have taken the rest of the games on this schedule and moved them all to night if they could have. But fortunately, they're limited to the six appearances, you know, per NFL rules. But there's just no doubt in my mind that that's part of the reason why the flex schedule flexed like it did and moved this game to 4:15 on Sunday. Because now it can be the second half of the national doubleheader, and more people will be watching. Advertisers want it. The NFL wants it. And plus the fact that you've got, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers involved here. There's no doubt in my mind that this is going to create another great rating. Now, here's an interesting scenario, and I read this on a couple of columns, and I forget the websites, to be honest with you. I usually write this stuff down, and I didn't do this. But it creates a kind of interesting scenario because I think we all realize that the Ravens players have been whining, and I know the PFW guys were talking about this earlier today. And I mentioned yesterday, I understand why they whine. You know, they put everything into what they did on Monday night, and they still came up short. And there were some questionable calls on both sides of the field, and I'm sure they feel like they were robbed. You just have to learn how to get over it. And I personally think the Ravens most likely get blown out this weekend because of their incessant whining. Their season's over. But, you know, I guess you say this is the conspiracy theorist in me. When the last game of this season is being televised where? It's being televised on the NFL Network. Patriots are playing at the Giants. Of course, we all know that the NFL owns the NFL Network. We all know that the NFL Network and the NFL in particular are having trouble getting clearance from major cable systems, Comcast in particular, throughout the country. And so right now, there are millions and millions of football fans who will not have access to a game that could mean everything. It could be an historical night coming up at the end of this month. And so I'm sure the Ravens players have been able to put two and two together, seeing where, you know, some of their accusations of the officials and the league want to see the Patriots win because it's all about getting that game to the last part of the season and not having, you know, two teams worth of scrubs going up against each other. I can certainly understand why they would draw to that conclusion. I think it's a little bit of a stretch. I do think it is sour grapes on their part, but you know what? The NFL is creating this problem themselves. This is all on the National Football League. So I don't expect, in fact, I'd be stunned if we heard any comments about it, because I'm sure they don't want to add to any of the validity of the rumors that are going on out there, especially the way some of the calls went on the field. So let's, you know, here's the thing. This week against the Steelers, it's a great matchup. You got a, you know, an undefeated team against a team that's 9-3. Two teams that are going to win their divisions. Two teams that could conceivably meet again in the playoffs this time next month or thereabouts within a week or two. Give it a week or two there. And who knows? I mean, you know, if somebody's on the take, which you never like to think anybody is, but I mean, I think we all realize that in this day and age with the money that's out there and what we saw in the NBA and everything else, I think you have to bring it up. I think it has to enter into the equation. I think sometimes, unfortunately, you have to question integrity when it's out there. It's a shame that we have to do that, but I think that the dollars and the ratings and everything is out there to such an extent that, quite frankly, we're not doing our jobs if we don't question and make sure that the proper you know, safeguards are in place. Be interesting to see who the officiating crew is for Sunday, and also be interesting to see if it's possible that you know, the members of the media who are out there, if other people bring it up. Has the thought crossed your mind? I'd be curious to know if it has. webradio@patriots.com is, of course, again, how you reach us here today on the program. So I wanted to bring that up about the cable ratings simply because I thought it's an extraordinary story, and the fact that they're, you know, number one all time where that's concerned for a sporting event is something that is indeed pretty rare. Let's see, what else do we have today? A couple of other things. You have the Steelers and the Patriots going into this game on Sunday as two of the best teams over the last decade playing in the month of December. Anybody see the numbers in USA today? But you have the Patriots, who are 31-13 over the last 10 years in the month of December. That's the second best record overall in the NFL. It's the best record in the AFC over the last 10 years in December. Best record in the NFL in December over the last 10 years actually belongs to the Green Bay Packers, 35-12, where the Patriots are 31-13. And then right behind the Patriots, 30 wins and 16 losses in December are the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, you know, you've got two teams who know how to play during this time of year. You have two teams who know what it takes to win, who have won, and know that, you know, this. I wonder if the fact that a lot of times there are teams that are successful in this time of year who are similar somewhat in offensive styles, wonder if that is a just a coincidence or not. I don't think so. Although the Patriots this year are not the same kind of team in December as they have been in years past, whereas Pittsburgh continues to be same kind of team that they've always been. Tough, physical, emphasize the run, you know, let Roethlisberger, you know, do what he does best, run behind Willie Parker and a massive offensive line. That's another reason why I think that point spread, even at 10.5 right now, just actually might be a bit on the high side. Of course, we also know that going into this game on Sunday, in addition to the fact you've got these two teams who are successful in December over the last 10 years, you've got teams who are familiar with each other in terms of streaks in the league. Patriots, of course, have won 12 in a row to start the year. You will recall, of course, that it was the Steelers that ended the Patriots' NFL record 18-game regular season win streak back on Halloween of 2004. 34-20 win back on October the 31st, 3 years ago, three-plus years ago now. That stopped the big one. But then the next year, in 2005, the Patriots returned the favor to the Steelers because it was the Patriots who ended the Steelers' 16-game regular season win streak themselves by beating Pittsburgh 23-20 on September the 25th of 2005. So each team has had a hand in stopping long win streaks against the other. Curious, huh? Kind of fitting, don't you think, that it's the Patriots and the Steelers going at each other here in this particular instance. Patriots have always, even though the Steelers have boasted a tough, a physical defense, a defense, in fact, that, you know, is certainly good at getting to the quarterback. Seen a lot of that with their zone blitzes, and they, you know, unbalance the line, and they come after you from all different directions, and they've really wreaked havoc, I think, especially over the last few weeks against some of the opposing quarterbacks. But the Patriots have always had pretty good success against the Steelers' defense. They've averaged, what, about 27 points per game in the last six regular season and playoff games against the Steelers since 1998. So the Patriots have had some success. They don't look at Ben Roethlisberger as Super Ben with the big S and the cape on his shoulders because his first two losses as an NFL starting quarterback both came at the hands of the Patriots. So I find, you know, these at least last little informational tidbits on the game sort of kind of moving in the Patriots' direction here. If you're looking for karma, if you're looking for, you know, the story within the story, I kind of find these numbers somewhat indicative. If you believe in what has gone on in the past actually has something to do with the present, then I think these are as good of numbers to hang your hat on as anything else. And here's a bit of a statistical oddity. Mike Tomlin, of course, we heard from him in his conference call here yesterday, but he is the fourth first-year head coach that the Patriots are going to face this season. You remember the other three? Well, let's see, Miami and Cam Cameron would be one. Then you have Wade Phillips and Dallas, who would be number two. And you got to go way back to September and remember Norv Turner in San Diego in his first year there is number three. So he's the fourth first-year head coach the Patriots are going to face this season. Now, last year, if you think that's a lot, and that's actually a pretty good number, last season, out of the 16 games the Patriots played, they played 8 games against teams with first-year head coaches. Now, that's extraordinary. You want to know how the Patriots did in those 8 games? They went 7-1. So unless a coach, to me, it sort of means unless a coach really knows the Patriots, really knows Bill Belichick, really knows what he's getting into, or certainly has faced these Patriots before, Patriots have, at least initially, I think, a bit of an advantage in a head-to-head matchup. They have the element of surprise. They have the element of not giving away too much. So here's the interesting part of the chess match in lining it up for this Sunday. You have, again, a coach in Mike Tomlin who is an outstanding coach, previously with Minnesota before getting his head coaching job in Pittsburgh. But a guy who has cut his teeth, in similar styles, certainly has seen a lot of the Patriots over the years. Who hasn't? I'm sure there are a lot of coaches that have seen a lot of film. But now is a chance really to match wits with a guy like Coach Belichick for the first time. And so he also has the ability of having now two games worth of videotape and of game film against the Eagles and against the Ravens, having seen the Patriots somewhat struggle against both of these teams in edging out wins on both sides and looking at how those teams did it. Call it a blueprint if you want. There now is an indelible record. And so the challenge here is for a guy like Tomlin to take whatever he can use out of the previous two Patriots opponents' games and then figure out a way to move that into his style of football and then be successful. And frankly, I think what both of those teams try to do against the Patriots, and I think this is a place where we could probably all agree, they're not dissimilar. I mean, Philadelphia used ball control, and they used Bryant Westbrook. They wanted to hold on to the ball. They wanted to keep the ball out of the Patriots' hands. Baltimore did the same thing this last week, and they did it better than Philadelphia did. Still lost. But then Pittsburgh, I'm sure, is feeling pretty confident in what they do best, which is certainly to control the football and run the football between the tackles. So I'm sure they feel like, well, we're better than those other two teams, so if we just follow that game plan, we should be successful. To me, this is the easiest way for the Patriots to game plan against somebody. It may be one of the easier setups that the Patriots have had all season long. They know what's coming at them. They know what the Steelers are going to do. It is not a secret. It's now up to the Patriots to game plan for that. The question, of course, remains, can they slow them down? Can they stop them? And then we'll relate back to what we were talking about here on the program yesterday. One of the big glaring problems right now is the Patriots' ability to stop teams on first down and to create enough resistance to where, they're not giving up 150 yards a game on the ground like they've done the last couple of weeks. And whether or not that has anything to do with Roosevelt Colvin's being out and the rotation of the linebackers or the Patriots moving from a 3-4 to primarily a 4-3 because of the depth situation they have on the defensive line, it's probably all a little bit of everything. These are the problems that are being worked on today and will be worked on tomorrow. And whether or not they can make those adjustments and slow the Steelers down, that's where this game will certainly be decided. If the Patriots can keep the Steelers to 3 and out and not let them drive, 7, 8, 9, 10 plays and put the football in Brady and company's hands more often and at least battle the Steelers even in time of possession, if not have a slight advantage there themselves, then the Patriots should win. Now, my guess is that the Steelers defensively will also look at what these last two teams have done and probably try to do similar. They're not going to let Randy Moss beat them. They'll probably get real nice and physical with Wes Welker again, coming off the middle, just like the Ravens did this last week. It's going to be up to the guys up the middle, the guys who can get right in the middle of the field and get into the linebacking core and get into the secondary to win this game. That's Kevin Falk, it's Lawrence Maroney, it's Benjamin Watson. And whether or not they can create some kind of a receiver screen situation for a guy like Welker to break him open once or twice. And it'd be a guy like Dante Stallworth. Stallworth, in fact, may be the key to the game on Sunday because of all the attention paid to a guy like Moss on the other end. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the Patriots come out with a little dink and dunk and try to ball control themselves to where they can create then a longer field almost for the Steelers and force the Steelers to go in the air and get away from what they do best. So if the Patriots can't drive it out and sustain it out with their own run game than they do it with a short, controlled passing game. As long as they can, you know, get some 7, 8, 9 play drives and put it in the end zone and score first. I think it's important that they score first so the Steelers then are already having to come from behind. I think the more that you can keep the Steelers out of their comfort zone, and the more that you can keep the Steelers out of what they do best and force them to go downfield more often, I think that plays into your hands a little bit more. And then you can gamble, then you can take more risks defensively and hopefully force them into some kind of turnover, and that's how you win the football game. So your thoughts are welcome. Again, webradio@patriots.com. We're going to sneak in a timeout here. We're going to come up with Coach Belichick from earlier today at Gillette Stadium. Then Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, will run down the Patriots and the Steelers matchup, of course, for Sunday afternoon. We'll take a look at the entire NFL schedule this week. Coming up right here inside the playbook.
He's been a 3-time champion, 2-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
3 touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com. Or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Yeah, let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of 3 flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook for a Thursday. John Rook here with you, coming to you from Philadelphia today. Get some college basketball coverage tonight, so that's why we're doing it over the phone. But we're glad to be with you as well as the Patriots get set to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday night at Gillette Stadium, Sunday afternoon at the very least, 4:15 Eastern time, the kickoff. Coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from his news conference from members of the Patriots media earlier today. Later in the next hour, of course, we'll have Russell Baxter from ESPN, the NFL research coordinator, joining us on Thursdays as he does throughout the entire season to look at the Patriots matchup as well as the rest of the week in the National Football League. And then we'll wrap up the program by letting you have your access pass to the Patriots locker room to hear from the players themselves on the matchup with the Steelers. So all of that is upcoming on the program today. And, of course, you can have your 2 cents worth. webradio@patriots.com is the email address. That's how you get to us. Send us your score predictions for Sunday. That's what we're looking for right now. Got this from Joshua, who says that Peter King has now picked the Steelers, and so actually clicked on the link here that he sent, and here's what Peter King says about the game. Of course, CNN and Sports Illustrated's own Peter King. He says, number one, 5 reasons why the Steelers are going to beat the Patriots this Sunday. A.J. Feely and Kyle Buller have put up 52 points on the Patriots the last 2 weeks. Ben Roethlisberger won't make the kind of late-game mistakes that those two backups did. Number two, Brian Westbrook and Willis McGahee have rushed for 190 yards on the Pats the last 2 weeks. I'm not in love with Willie Parker's recent rushing numbers, 52, 81, and 87, respectively, against 3 straight sub-500 teams, but I think the Patriots will be vulnerable against a power running game. Number three, Pats are tired after 3 straight night games, including the emotional Monday nighter in frigid Baltimore. Bill Belichick didn't even practice them Wednesday, an incredible rarity with a Sunday game upcoming. Number four, Hines Ward's will to win. The dude leads the league in it. I'm not sure what that means. And number five, he says, just a gut feeling. The strain of going for perfection seems to be wearing on New England, while Pittsburgh is just bullish enough not to fear the enormity of Sunday's stage. So he says, Steelers 27, Patriots 20. Kind of funny, that's exactly the opposite of what I picked. I said, Patriots 27, Steelers 20. So what say you? Agree or disagree on the reasoning that Sports Illustrated's own Peter King, and of course he's on the Sunday Night Football in America program on NBC as well before the Sunday night games. He's part of that pregame show. What do you think of Peter King's comments? webradio@patriots.com is how you get to us. Len sends, he says, I thought I saw signs of life with Lawrence Maroney in Monday night's game. He caught some passes, made some nice blocks and pass protection. Didn't seem to dance around when running the ball. It's the first time it seemed he was at least attempting to be more of the total package. What did you think? Well, I didn't really think anything. I still saw some dancing out there. I didn't see, he doesn't have the leg drive and the ability to push a pile like some of the guys do. And I really think that's what this team needs at running back. They need that Antoine Smith, Corey Dillon type of back, because I think that's where the Patriots have excelled in terms of their offensive style of running the football. I think Lawrence Maroney's a good back. I think he probably is better served as a guy who can share carries in a backfield with somebody else rather than being the premier go-to guy in an offensive backfield. I don't think that's a stretch right now. You know, I'm a little disappointed in what I've seen from him, as I still think he doesn't hit the hole that he needs to hit, and he doesn't yet realize that sometimes a 2-, 3-, and 4-yard gain is the best play to make in a particular instance. So in an effort to try to break for the big one, he ends up, you know, hurting himself and the team. Could it be better, Len? Maybe. I'm not sure that I see it. This one comes from Tommy, and Tom is in Ottawa, Canada, and he says, couple of things here. I thought the Pats were very lucky to come out with a win Monday night. I'm concerned about the Steelers this week. Good defense, solid offense, which plays with good balance, could cause us a lot of problems. Agreed, Tom. I get the impression that Parker is getting a lot of attention, especially from the media. Is this good for the Steelers passing game or irrelevant? I think it's irrelevant. Steelers are going to do what they do best, and that is ground control and, you know, let Roethlisberger try to work back there, and you're going to have to find some way to put some pressure on the guy. And I think also, quite frankly, I think you're going to want to keep him in the pocket because I think he will run with the football if you flush him out. I'm not so sure flushing him out of the pocket's a good idea. Let's see, what else here? A couple of other things. He says, according to the records, the Colts are the fourth best team in the NFL. Now, I imagine they would beat the Packers, but are the Cowboys better at the moment than the Colts? Or is it an NFC schedule that makes them look better than they are? I've been impressed with the Cowboys, so I have to wonder whether the Colts' recent poor form has dropped them to third best. Well, it's probably a combination of both. I think the Colts are still overall, frankly, the second best team in the league behind the Pats, at least at this stage, but the Cowboys are close. I think the Cowboys might have closed the gap a little bit, but I still think you've got to give the benefit of the doubt to the defending champs because they are that. And here's the other thing. The Colts have played with a lot of key injuries. Marvin Harrison's been gone for most of this season, and so they've had to go to one or two guys, and they're still having success. Teams know what's coming at them, and yet they still can't stop it. It's kind of like the Patriots. So if you've got a team that basically knows what it's going to do, and they're telling you what they're going to do, and you still can't stop it, they're still pretty good in my book. I don't know about you, but they're still pretty good. There's Josh in the UK who says, talking about Anthony Smith, what a bleep. Seriously, what's this guy's problem? He's got an IQ less than Craig from North Carolina or what? Oh, that's not right. That's not fair. I like Craig. This guy should just keep quiet and let his play do the talking. He's really a nobody, and Rodney put him in his place earlier. And it seems that everyone is picking the Steelers to win this Sunday on the upset pick. Someone needs to explain to me, if everyone thinks they're going to win, how is that actually an upset? Good point. Although, it's probably an upset because the odds makers say the Steelers right now are what, 10.5-point favorites? I mean, the Patriots are 10.5-point favorites. So if they're saying the Steelers are going to win, yeah, I guess you'd have to say that's an upset. But it seems like everybody's picking it, right? So why is the spread not getting lower than it is? That's what I kind of want to know. And Josh says, Pats by a touchdown this weekend. And then here's my question. Who would you say is the defensive MVP for this team? Good question, Josh. Right now, I'd have to say overall, the defensive MVP of this team, in my book, you could probably boil it down to a couple of selections. Number one, I think that Vince Wilfork has been extremely consistent, if not outstanding. And I think that with the last 2 weeks kind of set aside here, Wilfork has consistently plugged, you know, the two gaps that he's supposed to, especially when he has to play the nose tackle spot. He's created a lot of havoc and allowed a lot of guys like, you know, Bruschi and Vrabel and Sal to make plays simply because he's taken up so much space. And I think he has been a tremendous success. I also think that Mike Vrabel has probably had a Pro Bowl caliber year, and with the edge rushing that he's been getting and the plays that he has been making, I'd have to say that either one of those two guys right now would have to be considered the MVP for this season. I will tell you that I'm actually, early in the year we saw a lot from Adalis Thomas, and recently, and a lot of this has been because of the game plan, admittedly, I'm ready to see some more from Adalis Thomas, and I hope we begin to see it this Sunday. I don't know about you. Frank sends this one. He says, did anyone feel as though AD was sort of not going 100%? Watched the game a few times. There seemed to be more than one occasion when he seemed to be tentative. Did you guys notice this at all? The Ravens were mauling Patriots receivers, linemen, etc. Even saw on one Ravens offensive play, Rodney Harrison held and blocked in the back. It's hard for me to say anybody not going 100% because we're not out there in the field. I mean, what may look like less than 100% effort to you may be calculated, to be quite honest with you. And it's just unrealistic to think, if you've ever played the sport or ever played a sport, period, Frank, it's unrealistic to think that a player goes 100% out full bore on every snap of the football. We like to think that happens, and it probably does happen the overwhelming majority of the time. It's just unrealistic to think that really does in fact happen. I don't think it's humanly possible. But you have to kind of gauge and pick and choose your spots a little bit. The Ravens were extremely physical with the Patriots receivers. And I think we saw that in more than one instance. And a lot of that didn't get called. So that's why I think the Ravens whining is particularly, difficult to take. Because they got away with a ton of stuff. A ton of stuff. If you look at it on the films. So I think it's time that they probably just kind of shut their mouths and move on a little bit and, you know, have a nice off season. We'll see you next year. This one comes from John, who says, if there's one thing that we've learned from the Pats over the last 5 or 6 years, is that when we play a better team, we play better. I think our defense will step up and show us what they did earlier this year. The Steelers are not one of those we-don't-have-a-chance teams. They are coming to fight, and we know that. I think you'll see the Pats play the most physical game of the season on Sunday. And I hope that little guy Welker beats Big Mouth Anthony all day long. Fair enough. We'll find out, of course, if that's the case. Let's hear now from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, who got a chance to meet with the members of the Patriots media earlier today. And coming up in about 15 minutes, Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, will join us right here inside the playbook. But first, let's get this from Coach Belichick.
You know, getting caught up here on Pittsburgh, you know, a very impressive team to watch. They really do everything pretty well. They're good in all three phases of the game. They're well coached. They're tough. They're physical. They make a lot of plays. They run the ball. They're hard to run against. They throw it, and they're hard to pass it against. So I think they got a lot of good players. They got a good scheme, one that we've seen before. I think it's very similar to what they've done in the past. You know, a few new faces, but a lot of the core guys that we played against in those 04 and 05 games. So a lot of familiarity there, but at the same time, you know, a lot of new things that we got to get ready for, style of play that really we haven't faced this type of offense or this type of defense quite the way they do it, you know, in a little while. So need a good week of preparation. We're underway, and we'll, you know, step on the pedal here today and tomorrow and Saturday and try to be ready to go on Sunday afternoon. I think like any quarterback in a couple of years, you know, he's mature, does a lot of little things, maybe a little better than he did a couple of years ago, but he was pretty good then, he's pretty good now, and, you know, he's a winner. He wins a lot of games, and he makes good decisions. Obviously a good passer, he's strong in the pocket, hard guy to bring down, but he makes good decisions with the ball in critical situations, third down, red area, end of the game type situations. So, you know, he's certainly one of the better quarterbacks in the league, one of the better guys we've faced.
When you say you have faced that kind of defense, what sort of challenges do they pose to their defense? What makes them different than...
Well, just the schemes they run. You know, we've seen, you know, the Jets and Dallas and San Diego are all 3-4 base teams. They don't quite run it the way Pittsburgh runs it, that's all. You know, Pittsburgh has their own way of doing it, and it's unique to them, and so that's, you know, that's who we play this week. That's a challenge this week.
What is your study of Pittsburgh this week? Think about it, you've had a lot of exposure over the years to Nick Foles' game. Talking about how can you tell the fingerprints of Mike Tomlin, what he's brought, in addition to what Foles already had there, what he's brought in terms of the whole Tampa team? Is this,
I'd say it's pretty subtle. Yeah. I think that a lot of the things that they do are what they do is what that's what they do. It's pretty much what they've been doing when LeBeau was there in 92. And then, of course, he left and went to Cincinnati and Buffalo and came back. And, you know, when Dom was there and Marvin and, you know, they've had a lot of different coordinators on the defensive side of the ball. But essentially their defensive package is pretty consistent. I haven't been broke for the last 15 years. But, I mean, it's, you know, whether it was Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green and, you know, Holmes and the different linebackers they've had there, the defensive line, I mean, you know, the secondary, it's looks pretty familiar to me. You know, now every once in a while they'll, you know, come to something like, you know, early in round – what, 01, 02, 03, teams started playing empty. They've modified their package a little bit against some empty sets and that type of thing. But, you know, it's because they saw it and it was new. And, you know, but the stuff that they've seen before, the two-back stuff, the slot stuff, the one-back stuff, they kind of do what they do. They do it pretty well.
Coach,
Well, look, I don't want the, you know, I made a comment the other day about, you know, that our team was tired. And I think at midnight or 1 a.m., whatever time it was, Monday night, Tuesday morning, you know, we were tired. But it's Wednesday, the game's Sunday afternoon, and we'll be ready to go. So, you know, at the end of a week like that and playing on the road, playing a tough game, you know, sure, it takes something out of you. But, you know, we bounced back yesterday, and you know, we'll be at it today, and we'll be ready to go Sunday. So, you know, we play once a week. We got all week to get ready for the game, just like everybody else does, and that's what we're going to do.
You mentioned the line, some of the linebackers. It's like James Harrison is another guy that's coming from just kind of breakout here. What have you seen from him on tape?
Really impressive. Yeah, he's really a good football player. Very explosive. Got good speed. Real tough. Makes a lot of big plays. Very physical player. I'd say one of the most physical players in the league. You know, he plays on the coverage teams, on the punt teams, on the kickoff team. He's made big plays in that phase of the game too. Hasn't taken anything away from his performance on defense or his production on defense. He's a good pass rusher. He's a good run defender. He's good at the point of attack. He's good in pursuit. He's an explosive player. You know, he's got some of the best hits, you know, we've seen all year, you know, in their games that we've broken down. He's an explosive impact player. He's a good one. You know, he's very good in the kicking game when he played for him, and now he's had a chance to play on defense. And he's not that he didn't play on defense before, but he, you know, certainly played more this year, and he's had a lot of production, but his production hasn't dropped off on special teams either. And so he's a good football player. You got to know when he's on the field. He makes a lot of plays.
Bill, you mentioned in the past when you have a successful run defense, the players have the proper fits. So the layman, what exactly does that mean?
Well, I mean, the runner only needs one hole to go through. So however you construct your defense to handle all the different running plays that you see, zone plays, scheme plays, inside plays, outside plays, cutback plays, power plays, all those things. You know, it has to be coordinated across the board. You can be good at the point of attack, and, you know, a good run will find a seam somewhere else. So you have to have however many people you have in the front, whatever technique they're playing, whether it's one gap, two gap, stunting, playing straight, penetrating, reading, whatever it is, it has to be consistent so that you can defend a line of scrimmage. So that's what it comes down to. It's not any one scheme or player, but all, however many guys it is, 6, 7, 8, however many you're defending with, it all has to be coordinated, and everybody has to do their job across the board.
Is that the top challenge really every week in terms of having a productive run defense, getting all those players on the same page working together?
Well, I'd say that's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it. But, you know, there's no running plays that are designed to not block people. So no matter who you put there, somebody's assigned to block them. So then it comes down to whether or not, you know, they block you or they don't. So it's not like when we line up in a defense and even we're in the proper position, they still have a player to block each one of our players. You know, just like we have a player to block each one of their defenders. And so whether we get them blocked or don't get them blocked, and then whether you can tackle the runner, then that's ultimately that's what it comes down to in the running game, is getting a guy with the ball on the ground. So you can have good fits, you can be in good position. If you get blocked or if you can't tackle the runner, then, you know, you're not going to have a good run defense.
What was more the issue in the Ravens game? Was it more tackling?
Yeah, we're done with the Ravens game. We're on to Pittsburgh.
What would you like to see improved in the Pittsburgh game?
Oh, there's a lot of things we could, yeah, there's things we could do better in every phase of the game. And we've talked about that, and we're on to Pittsburgh, so.
Bill, you said that not a lot changed with defense, with Lebeau still there on offense. Obviously, Wilson Hunt's not there anymore. What are the changes? Have you seen much difference in getting the ball downfield?
Not a lot. No, I think it's they're still, their offense looks pretty similar to what it did in the past. You know, they've worked Holmes in there. He wasn't there. Or, you know, we didn't see a lot of him when we played him a couple of years ago. So, you know, he's a big part of their offense, but in Washington. But, you know, Ward and Miller's taken a big role for him. Parker, of course. So, offensive line's good. You know, the right tackle, Colston, is an excellent player. He's been a real good addition. to their offensive line. I think he's one of the better tackles that we've seen this year, especially in the running game. So there's some new players, but I think overall scheme-wise, you know, they have their two back runs, they got their one back runs, they got their play actions, they got their drop backs. They spread the field on you on third down like they always have. Not as much four receivers because they use Heath Miller like a fourth receiver as a flexed out tight end and that kind of thing. It's the four receiver passing game, but only three receivers in the game. But you know, Miller's probably as good as most receivers anyway, so they don't really lose much with him in there. In fact, a lot of ways they gain it because of their the different matchup on the defense, and it gives you another protector if you need him. So it's good.
Hey, in terms of so-called bulletin board material, how much do players and coaches consider the source?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, the most important thing is for us to be ready to play the game on Sunday afternoon. Steelers are a good football team. They're tough. I'm sure they're going to play hard. We're going to play our best. That's what it's going to come down to.
Troy Polamalu has been back to practice this week after missing some time. So many players. What does he do to this team? What dimension is he adding to the defense?
No, he's an impact player. He's a big playmaker in both the running game and the passing game. He's got tremendous speed, tough, big hitter. You know, last week they didn't play their dime defense, I think probably because he wasn't in there, so they just used nickel. They're really a dime team. He plays down around the line of scrimmage a lot in that dime, in their dime coverage package, so I'm sure that would be a grouping that with him in there they probably would use more of. It's one of their core defensive packages, but he's an outstanding football player. He makes a lot of tackles. He's hard to block. He's very fast in a passing game, can play man, can play zone, and he's a hard guy to throw in front of because he's so fast and he's a good tackler. He comes up and, you know, usually makes a play for not much of a gain after the guy catches the ball. So he adds a lot to their defense. He's a really good player.
Do you ever use this so-called bullet
for it? I think the most important thing for us is to understand what Pittsburgh – how they play the game, how we need to play it, and how we need to what we need to do to win. I think that's what's the most important thing.
So you don't use it?
I'm saying we can sit around and put a bunch of stuff up on the board and, you know, write stuff down on paper and all that. I think in the end it comes down to whether you can outplay the other team on Sunday or not outplay them. So on a priority basis, that's what our priority is. Trying to prepare well and play well. You know, I would hope when we walk on the field, we expect to win. That's what I would hope. I would hope that we would expect to win the game when we walk out there on the field. I would expect when Pittsburgh walks out there that they're going to expect to win. I can't imagine that they would approach it any differently. So we expect to win, they expect to win. Both teams will play hard. We'll see who's better on Sunday. That's, I don't know what else there is.
It seems unlikely that one of your guys would go out publicly and guarantee.
I would think every one of our players would expect to win the game on Sunday. That's what I would think. I would hope they would prepare and go out there with a confidence that we could play well and win it. And I can't imagine playing another NFL team that didn't feel the same way. And I certainly, you know, the Steelers, and as good as they are, the way they've played, their record, their team, you know, I'm sure they're confident that they can come in here and win. And I think if I was in Pittsburgh, I'd feel the same way. And I think if they were here, they would feel the same way that we feel. That they would be confident that we could win. So, you know, that's why you play the game. But I don't think either team lacks confidence. I don't think either team's going into the game not expecting to win it. I can't imagine. Hey, maybe you guys think so, but I can't imagine anybody going into this game not expecting that they're going to do well and win. I mean, based on what? Okay.
And that is Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from early today at Gillette Stadium in his press conference with members of the Patriots media. We welcome you back inside the Patriots playbook, hour number two here on Thursday here on Patriots.com radio. We'll turn our attentions now to the man with the numbers, or at least the guy that, you know, professes to know, have all the numbers. Russell Baxter, of course, is the ESPN research coordinator for the National Football League, joining us as he does on Thursdays. Russell, good afternoon to you. How are you?
800-555.
Really? You should probably come up with your own 900 number, huh?
I'll quote Dustin Hoffman from Rain Man. 82.
That's exactly
remember
right.
There were four toothpicks still in the box.
Exactly. Right. One of the other things that I haven't even had a chance to get to today, because we're kind of, you know, picking up the pieces and this and that, all that kind of stuff, but David Fleming, did you see his page two article?
I did not see that. No, I'm sorry.
Okay, well.
It's notes day, so we're.
Exactly. Well, I figured as much, but I just wanted to point this out to Patriots fans who might not have seen it. On ESPN.com page two, David Fleming is one of the columnists there, gave not one, not two, but 33 reasons why he's convinced the Steelers will beat the Patriots on Sunday. 33.
That's a lot of free time.
It must be. Sounds to me also like somebody really doesn't want the Patriots to win.
Yeah, that's 33 reasons, huh?
Yeah, 33.
33.
Yep.
Wow, that's I might have to go back and check that. And 33.
Yep, that's right.
Hmm.
And a lot of them are goofy reasons, but the fact is that, you know, I think Russell, because of what happened this last week, you know, with winning by the skin of their teeth against Baltimore, I think there are a lot of fans out there and a lot of media members who are ready to see this thing end and, for whatever reason, preserve the 72 Dolphin streak. I think it's part of the reason, again, why we had the unbelievable cable rating that we had last week with 17.5 million people watching. There's a tremendous amount of interest, and it's not all because they love the Patriots.
No, not at all. Not at all. And, you know, I don't know what our ratings were the week before when Miami played Pittsburgh. But we had a pretty high number for that game as well, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also the fascination with the other end. Okay? The people who either want to see Miami continue this, you know, march toward, or actually kind of a crawl toward history, or to see if they're actually going to finally win a game and stuff.
Right.
So there is that rubbernecking fascination we have as fans. You know, it's like the, you know, unfortunate accident on the side of the road, okay? You know, you want to make sure everybody's okay, but no one can help but look. And it always slows down traffic a little bit. So, but what a fascinating game Monday night. And not surprisingly, the Patriots find another way to win over to some crazy circumstances. And I think if you're asking me of all the, you know, of all the stuff that happened at the end of the game, I think, I mean, it's twofold. The Jabbar Gaffney catch, I would have probably taken a look at that one more time.
I thought he had it. In all honesty, I thought it was a catch.
I saw the ball still moving.
I certainly did not see enough that could overrule it.
Well, that is definitely true, and I think that's what the ruling was. There was probably enough to overrule it. When I saw it the first couple times, I still saw movement of the ball. That being said, even if it wasn't a catch, it wasn't like that was the fourth down of the game.
Right.
So, it wasn't the it was not the beat all end all, but the holding, you know, you were holding, so
sure.
that's life. The unfortunate timeout, well, oops, you called timeout.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen games where false start penalties have seen a team like miss a field goal, and they move back 5 yards and they kick the field goal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of crazy circumstances and stuff, but. Very competitive game. As we talked about earlier in the year, I think there is a little bit of concern about New England's defense, and particularly probably the middle of the field. But I don't know, despite what you see with the numbers with the Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't know if they necessarily have the running game that everybody thinks they is and will. I'm sorry, good English. Everybody thinks they have, because it's not a game built on power. I don't know if they'll have to. I think they're going to have to find a different way to beat the New England Patriots if they can. I don't think it's necessarily a game where they shove the ball down their throat or attempt to do that. Like I think a lot of other. I think people are kind of caught up in the Pittsburgh Steelers being this power running team, and they really haven't been a power running team for 2 years now.
They certainly purport to be that, though, don't they?
Well, I don't. I don't know if it's them who purports it so much. I think people still look at the numbers. I think the people remember the Steelers from 3 years ago and in 2004 running the ball over 600 times. But they ever since Ben Roethlisberger had that great postseason, save for the Super Bowl, okay? He did not have a great Super Bowl against Seattle. But he had great playoff games against Cincinnati and when they upset Indianapolis and when they won at Denver. They became a team that more set up the run with the pass. They tried that again last year. It was a disaster because the quarterback was either being thrown off a motorcycle, in the hospital with an appendectomy, or suffering through a concussion. I think Ben Roethlisberger is a different player this year, but I still think their philosophy is almost throw more to set up the run. And you don't see these overpowering numbers. Not saying they're not ranked high in rushing, but that's where yards can be deceptive. When you watch I'm talking about watching, John. Watch the Pittsburgh Steelers play this year. Do you really see that dominating ground game that you saw a few years ago? No, you see Willie Parker get his occasional big yards.
Yeah.
Okay? Their power comes from Najee Davenport if they decide to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not a team that is blowing people off the line of scrimmage. Where I think they are better this year is on the defensive side of the ball, where they've been a lot more aggressive and a lot more opportunistic.
How do you think then this might relate to how the Patriots would conceivably prepare for Pittsburgh? I mean, especially since Pittsburgh now has what we talked about last week. They have a little bit more of a quote-unquote blueprint, seeing what Philadelphia and Baltimore have been able to do with, you know, their somewhat, you know, power running game.
Well, I don't know if you can become just like the Patriots will face this as we come down the stretch and then they get into the playoffs. I don't think you can become a team that doesn't necessarily rely on the run, especially the power run, John, and then all of a sudden the second week of December make up your mind that you're going to become a power running team.
Mm-hmm.
The running game takes, in some ways, takes longer time to develop than it does the passing game. A lot of timing, a lot of, you know, the play of the offensive line, the continuity and so on. And I don't think you can just all of a sudden change what you are this late in the season. You know, that being said, Indianapolis didn't play good defense for most of the year, and then all of a sudden they did. That could have been for other factors. But I think changing your offensive philosophy in December doesn't necessarily, it just doesn't happen. I think if the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to win this game, I think they're going to have to do it defensively by getting some heat on Tom Brady. And I think the way they can try to exploit New England's defense is maybe via something that they've used very successfully this year, and that's throwing to the tight ends. They have two pretty decent tight ends in terms of pass catchers, one very good in Heath Miller, and a rookie in Matt Spaeth, who's become a pretty good guy in the red zone area when called upon.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you kind of, I mean, think back of New England's problems, not that they've had many this year, but over the middle of the field when they played the Colts last year in the AFC Championship game, the guy that gave him the most problems was Dallas Clark.
Right.
And I think that's where you kind of try to attack New England. And then when you get them on their heels, and maybe then you then run the draw play or the delay play to Willie Parker. Now, Willie Parker gets past your second line of defense. He's as bad as fast as any running back in the league. But last week was a perfect example, and conditions had something to do with it. But Willie Parker, 2 yards, 3 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards. He's a back that's capable of doing that. But make no mistake, this is a Pittsburgh Steelers team, and I think that's why Ben Roethlisberger's sacks have been up, that likes to throw rather than run. And they get those running numbers very late in the game rather than coming out and running the ball down your throat. Now, defensively, they've been much improved this year, John. Their defensive unit in 12 games has given up only 14 touchdowns,
right,
which is pretty impressive. Of course, in one of my favorite numbers this week, Randy Moss has 17 touchdowns on his own.
Mm-hmm.
So he has more than the Steelers have given up this year. It's such a great contrast because you've got number one offense, number one defense. I think that's what I'm looking at is this game. How will Pittsburgh's defense with the zone blitz and Dick LeBeau and the things he comes up with do at trying to pressure Tom Brady, who has been sacked a little more the last couple of games, 6 sacks in the last 2 games,
right,
opposed to 10 in the first 10.
Right.
I think my favorite numbers is this contrast. The Pittsburgh Steelers this year in 12 games have given up 155 points.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive.
Yep.
The New England Patriots this year in the first half have scored 255.
100 more.
100 more in the first half alone.
Yeah.
It's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. So this is the irresistible force against the immovable object, isn't it?
Well, you know, I don't know if I'd use irresistible force. You know, I've also seen Pittsburgh at times this week, I mean, this year, most notably with Jay Cutler, who came in and did a pretty good job throwing the ball on them, at times when they played Arizona earlier this year, have some success throwing the ball on them. A lot is given on pressure, but they have done a better – last year when they played, I think they stayed back a lot. They seemed like they sat back a lot. And if they didn't get pressure on their quarterback, they really got picked apart. This year they seem like they might not necessarily get the sacks, John, but they seem like they're playing better pass coverage this year. They've always been tough to run on. I mean, you got Casey Hampton in the middle, Aaron Smith, who's a very underrated defensive end, although he's been to a Pro Bowl as well. And if you say Pittsburgh, you always got to say linebackers because they're led, you know, their history and a linebacker. You know, remember, they got rid of Joey Porter this year.
Right.
Which was a big to-do. Until James Harrison showed up on a Monday night against Baltimore, and like, where'd you get this guy? Well, we didn't draft him. We got him from Kent State. So, and they added some linebackers, as you know, through the draft this year. But that being said, New England's got its own weapons. They've got a tight end can also. And the tight end against the 3-4 defense is always very interesting. He seems to be the guy who gets lost. And the tight ends can be very prominent in this game because both teams play the 3-4 or versions of it. And this could be a big Heath Miller, Ben Watson afternoon.
Right. Yeah, I think that certainly. I think that certainly makes a lot of sense. Let's say we traipse around the NFL and take a couple of quick looks at some of the other games for the weekend. First, I want to start it though with tonight's game, even though it's Chicago at Washington for the Thursday night game. This has got to still be considered a battle for survival and trying to stay alive in the NFC. Both teams are 5-7. Is there any emotion left on the Washington side of the field at all after everything they've been through?
Well, you know, it's been a forgettable week, and I think there's some. I mean, I think I know there was a lot levied on Joe Gibbs last week, and he took a lot of the blame on himself for how the game ended and so on, and, you know, with the consecutive timeout and so on. And, you know, my answer to that was, you know, he had a lot on his mind this week, too. I'm not saying that as an excuse, but the circumstances of which surrounded that game last week were heartbreaking. But, you know, as most times, as we know, you know, with the exception of the weekend of 9/11, where the league canceled the games and pushed back the season, the games do go on. And I think the Redskins do have plenty of emotion left. I still think they're a solid team. They have unfortunately fallen into that mode of finding ways to lose games. Now the Bears, you don't know what you're going to get in from week in and week out, but my guess is if they follow their pattern from the last, get this, nine games, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're going to win tonight. So, very bizarre. And this was a team who was in the Super Bowl last year. They're sitting at 5-7, lost more than twice as many games they did last year. A lot of people like to point to, you know, be it Rex Grossman or Ryan Greasy, or we can't get in the ball in the hands of Devin Hester enough. Let me point out a couple things about the Bears that have been very disappointing. They don't run the football at all. They've already given up 38 sacks this year. They gave up only 25 all last season.
Wow.
So that lack of balance has made their quarterbacks a sending duck. And that defense, which has been much celebrated, just isn't a dominating defense in terms of stopping the run. You can pop some big plays in terms of the run. I think Clinton Portis has the speed to do that tonight. And I think I kind of like the Redskins' chances in this game.
All right. Well, another game in the NFC actually looks somewhat intriguing, only that we've seen a team collapse over the last couple of weeks, whether or not they have enough to kind of pull themselves up again this week and stay alive in that playoff chase. Dallas is playing at Detroit. Cowboys by far and away right now with beating Green Bay, 11-1, overwhelming favorite to hold on to home field advantage. But Detroit at home at just 6-6. Do they have enough left in the tank to kind of hang on and stay alive for a playoff spot?
Oh, gee, let me think about this. No.
No, you didn't think very long, Russell.
Well, listen, I think a lot of people had high hopes from them coming in.
Yeah.
This is a team that looks like they have built, kind of. You know, a lot been made of what John Kitna promise/guaranteed, right? You know, different things,
right,
that he said the beginning of the year, But here's an overwhelming stat, an absolutely overwhelming stat. Since the beginning of last year, Anybody out in your audience there, and I know they don't answer, care to guess how many times John Kitten has been sacked?
In the last year?
Yeah. 28 games.
In 28 games, how many times he's been sacked? I'll say he's probably been sacked about 70 times.
You just missed by 41.
Oh, no!
111 times John Kitten has been sacked in the last 28 games.
In 28 games?
Yes. That's a nice balance.
It's amazing that he's able to walk.
Well, but let me point something out here. Let's throw out the game on Thanksgiving Day where they ran for 130 yards and still lost.
Right.
Here are the rushing numbers from the Lions, I believe, the last three other games. Minus 18, 25, and 23. And, you know, like 8 carries for minus 18 or 7 carries for 23 yards. There's no balance on that offense. There wasn't much balance last year. There's even more balance, less balance this year. And last week, Minnesota found every which way to score on them, be it Adrian Peterson, be it a kickoff return, be it a couple touchdown passes from Tavares Jackson. They look like a very deflated football team. Dallas still has a head of steam. I think they're very, very determined to finish 15-1, which would be one hell of a year if another team goes 16-0.
Sure.
And it's the only team you lost to all year. I just don't like Detroit's chances of this. I think they're running into a real buzzsaw, and they're a buzzsaw that's lost its blade.
Right. All right, let's flip it over to the AFC. Cleveland's playing at the Jets. Of course, Patriots still have to see the Jets again, and I know a lot of fans around here, for obvious reasons, are looking forward to the 3-9 Jets right now visiting. But Cleveland at 7-5, still also trying to hang on to potential wild card spot, and I think if they happen to lose this week on the road, they could be in some trouble.
Well, yeah, and listen, the Jets have kind of awoken.
Yep.
The last few weeks.
Yep.
I mean, I know it was Miami last week, but, you know.
But they did put a pasting on
them. They put a pasting on them, which, let's be honest, I know the Dolphins are 0-12, but, you know, they lost half their game by 3 points. So that was a rare game in which Miami really got, I think the only game where you really saw them get manhandled, per se, was the Patriots game, and so on. They also did beat Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago as well. The problem with Cleveland is, as prolific as their offense has become, when you play defense the way they play defense, you are susceptible to getting beat by anyone. And that's the problem that Cleveland runs into. Cleveland has scored 336 points this year, which is a dramatic improvement, John, from last year. They've also given up 338.
Yeah.
Okay? Which is also, I don't know whether you characterize that, but their games are 31-28, 41-31.
Characterized as there's still work to do. Right. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Do you know who they... John, I can say this to you. They're the old cardiac kids Browns of Brian Sipe.
Yeah. There's some,
okay, Dave
there's
Logan,
some similarities
Reggie
there.
Rucker,
sure.
Yeah. Every game's a nail-biter. Every game's a thrill. It comes down to a last... You know, it was so funny, the irony last week of the Kellen Winslow play in the front corner of the end zone that I thought was
I thought that was a bad call. I thought he was pushed out of bounds.
Well, the thing that was ironic about it was that the Cleveland Browns won a game like that last year. Against the New York Jets.
Wow.
When
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Right. And, of course, Cleveland and the Jets play again this week. So
what goes around comes around is what you're
well,
saying.
Well, it's either a lousy rule on both instances.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually something I was surprised they didn't address. I understand that they don't want to make every game, every play reviewable and so on. But the more that happens, it's something the league will have to address, because when you see it happen at least once or twice a year, it's going to be a rule eventually they take a closer look at. So, and I'm trying to remember, I'd have to check with Chris Mortensen if it wasn't something they did take a look at in this off season. So.
Interesting. The other game that I wanted to look at is the Sunday night game. And, of course, the Colts playing at the Ravens for obvious reasons, because the Patriots have played both of these guys, and, of course, because the Colts still have, you know, their design set on, I don't know if catching the Patriots is reasonable, but certainly holding on to that two spot in the AFC, which right. Of course would mean a bye, and by some chance the Steelers did beat the Patriots and the Colts lost, well then there could be a little bit of trouble there. However, I happen to think that the Baltimore is done for the year after last week.
I have a tendency to agree with you, and you know, who knows what's going to happen to them the rest of the season. And I do throw that out there because they do have the Miami Dolphins on their schedule later in the year, the Baltimore Ravens. So I'm just, that's just like an interesting little hint I'm throwing out there as well. Mindset will be very important. I think, you know, you often hear about, and I certainly don't believe this, about teams who just lay it up and call it in and stuff. And I can cite many instances every year where a team thinks it's going in and going to win a game because the other team, quote unquote, quits. At least we perceive them as quitting. And they wind up losing to that team and costing themselves a playoff spot and so on. But I will say that sometimes with veteran teams, they kind of lose that steam when they realize their season is not necessarily going anywhere. I think it happens more to veteran teams than rebuilding teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that loss took a lot out of the Ravens last week. I don't think there's any question about it. I think it took a lot out of them more emotionally than maybe even physically. But I think it always takes something out of you physically when you play the New England Patriots. Anyway, that being said, Indianapolis has done a pretty good job against the Ravens in recent years. They've beaten them the last two times in Baltimore, including the playoff game last year. You might see Marvin Harrison this week. That sounds like a might. But Indy's still down their right tackle. Ryan Deem doesn't look like he's going to play. But Peyton Manning just keeps on finding ways.
Yeah.
Last week was actually, they got into a kind of a shootout game, John, which you haven't seen a lot of them with the Colts this year. But they still found a way. You know, Luke Lawton on a shovel pass becomes Peyton Manning's 298th career touchdown pass and held off a very, I'll tell you, Jacksonville is a very intriguing team. Around, you know, you've heard Chris Berman refer to them as the Yeah Butt team.
Yeah.
They're a lot more Yeah than Butt these days. That's a team that's going to, I think, very intriguing if and when they make the playoffs this year.
Right.
They seem like they're a lot more mature than they were a year or two ago, even going back to when they lost to the Patriots in the playoffs 2 years ago. But back to this game, I think Indy's defense is a big key here. They've really become great swarming tackles. You know, Willis McGahee, he's having a really, really good year.
Right.
But Kyle Bowler was not sacked last week. I don't think that's going to be the case this week.
You know, the one thing that the Colts actually remind me of, they do remind me in a lot of ways in their ability just to do whatever it takes, remind me of the Patriot teams the last couple of years. Just because Patriots have also had to play with injuries to keep personnel, and they just did whatever it took to win. And I think that's really been that's been the mantra for this Colt team this year. Because
I don't think there's any question about it. It's something you and I talked at the beginning of the year. It seems like it gets more and more apparent every week. The role reversal of the 2004 Patriots and the 2000. I'm not saying that's how it's going to turn out.
Right.
Because the Patriots won the Super Bowl that year. But the high-scoring Colts of 2004, the do-whatever-it-takes winning of the 2004 Patriots,
right.
It's exactly what this is. So far, it's almost identical to what has happened. The Patriots had their share of bangs and bruises and Troy Brown playing defensive back that year, but they still go 14-2 and win the Super Bowl. And the Colts score all those points, and Peyton Manning throws 49 touchdown passes. They put up 49 additional points in a playoff game against the Broncos and then get a field goal in the snow at Foxborough.
Right, that's exactly right. Well, considering the Boffo box office hit that you guys had last Monday night, I'm going to allow you to give me one reason why we should tune in this Monday night for New Orleans at Atlanta.
I get the funny feeling people are going to be spending more time at court that day than they will in Atlanta.
Yeah,
I believe
kinda.
That's the day
that
Michael, I think he's sentenced that day.
Yes, he is.
I believe, yes.
Yes, he is.
So, ironic. How lousy are the New Orleans Saints feeling these days after last week's loss, in which they looked like they had everything all sewed up, decided to run a trick play, bobbled the ball in Tampa Bay, took it down, and scored the game-winning touchdown. It's been a long year for Atlanta, obviously. Who is going to start Chris Redmond this week?
Yeah, I saw that.
As their quarterback from Louisville.
Right.
And the Saints, 0-4, got themselves back, then lost to the winless Rams. This week they had this game. And I'm not trying to throw the young man under the bus, but I just want to point this out to a couple people, which is Is anybody talking much about Reggie Bush and Mario Williams these days?
Very little.
Mario Williams has had a pretty good year with the Houston Texans. Had 2.5 sacks again last week.
Right.
I think he's up to 8.5 this year in 12 games. Houston has won as many games as the New Orleans Saints. I think the expectations were a little higher for New Orleans, who I believe Sports Illustrated had them in the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl over San Diego. Very disappointing year for them. And it seems like it's not the offense one week, it's the defense the next week. You can't really put your finger on what's gone wrong there, but a lot of second-guessing after that move last week, the pitch. You know, watching Reggie Bush pitch that ball, again, I'm not trying to, not blaming him. I think it was more the instance of play calling in that instance. It was almost like, John, when, not that you and I were in Little League together, but it's like when you're playing first base and there's some kid playing second base and he's 3 feet away from you, they hit him a ground ball and he throws it to you overhand.
Yeah.
You think maybe you could just lob it to me. We're going to get the guy out.
Right. Exactly.
That's almost what that play looked like last week.
Mm-hmm.
And Tampa Bay, which has become a great story this year, now 8-4 and on the verge of locking up the NFC South. So all I know is there's one game Monday night and we have it. To steal a line from a good friend of mine. Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly right. All right, well, let's go full circle back to the Pats and the Steelers then. What's your gut instinct tell you? Do the Patriots keep it going here, or will the Steelers win this one and burst the bubble here?
I think the Patriots find a way to keep it going, and maybe a little more decisively than they have the last couple weeks. A lot of this is going to depend on the Steelers' defense. I don't think the Steelers' offense, again, they're not a power-running team. And if they get down 10-0 and they get down 14-0, even though they don't run, they need to create the illusion that they do run. If they get down big, that illusion disappears. And we've seen Ben Roethlisberger this year have games where he sacked 4 times, 5 times, 7 times. He has done a great job, and I mean a great job, escaping people this year. Getting his escapability back, I think, is a big reason the Steelers are 9-3.
Right.
But doing that, it happening and not happening are two totally different things. And again, I think if the Steelers do fall behind, and they are capable of falling behind because we've seen them, we saw them fall behind against Cincinnati last week.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen them kind of get off the sluggish starts in recent weeks, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that they are not the power football team per se that I think people still, I think people will always think of Pittsburgh runs some football with power. Because they did it in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, and half of this decade.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great illusion. That's not to say they can't run the football. It's just done a different way these days.
Yeah. I guess, well, time is going to tell. Hey, Russell, as always, great to visit with you. Good insight as well. You can't do anything about the schedule on Monday night. You're right. It's the only game you got. It's the only game that's on.
That's exactly right. I have some advice for you, though. Get a good cheesesteak.
I did already.
Oh, okay, where'd you go?
Tony Luke's.
There. Good research. There you go. Well done.
Thank you very much. It's all not right. Too far away from the link either. Just kind of down the street a little bit.
There's, you know what? It's some of the best places down there.
Yep.
This is free advice for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going down. Chris Berman got he got an award from the Maxwell Club for all his fine work over the years and stuff like that.
Right.
And the next morning I got up and I wanted to get cheesesteak for lunch. And I went to the front desk of the hotel, and this was what she told me. Go out of the hotel, make a right, there's a vendor, ask for the older couple. That is getting it done.
That is getting it done.
Because they shared a stand on the street.
Wow.
Okay? So they said, ask for the older couple. Okay?
That is getting ridiculous.
Pay about $2.95.
Oh, wow!
Great stuff.
Yeah,
great
it's
stuff.
Good stuff. Well, actually, that's what I did when I found this place a few years ago.
Right.
I asked the hotel front desk. I said, "Look, you know, I with all due respect to the touristy places, I won't name them by name here. I said, I want to go where Philadelphians go.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
They sent me to this place, and I've never missed it. Every time I come back to Philly, if I have a 2-hour layover in the airport, I'm dropping in the cab, and I'm going. That's how
there
good
you
it
go.
Is.
There you go.
That's right.
The hole in the walls, whatever you want to call them and stuff like that, can never go wrong.
No, absolutely.
I say hole in the wall with affection.
Well, those are the best places. I think we all know that, right?
Places.
Absolutely.
John told Tony to tell Terry.
That's exactly right, and that's what this place is. That's exactly right. Good stuff, Russ. Thank you.
All right, enjoy your weekend, John.
You too. We'll talk again next week.
Okay.
You got it. Russell Baxter is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN, joining us here on Thursdays, as he always joins us here inside Patriots Playbook. We got some time left of the program to get you inside the locker room today and let you hear from the players as they prepare for the Steelers on Sunday. Gary, who are we going to hear from? Any idea what the list of guys in the locker room is at this time?
Brady, Chad Brown, Heath Evans, Junior Seau, Ellis Hobbs, Kevin Falk, Rodney Harrison, Wes Welker, and Ty Warren.
Sounds like damn near the whole roster, which I like. I think that's great. So let's let the players do the speaking for themselves. We'll be back in the studio. Yay! I'm sure Gary will be happy for that. Next Tuesday for our next edition of Patriots Playbook. And, of course, we'll be talking about not only the Steelers, but then getting ready, hopefully, for what could be an historical stretch run for the New England Patriots. Game time, of course, 4:15 Eastern time, kickoff for the Pats at home at Gillette on Sunday against the Steelers. All right, let's take you now inside the Patriots locker room.
What is your first impression of these Steelers, the same Blitzburg Steelers that you knew in the past?
They blitz us. They blitz us quite a bit. I think they've their style's pretty much the same. They're a very good defense. Obviously the best in the league according to the statistics. So, and if you ask them, they'll tell you that. So it's going to be a great challenge for us. Hopefully we can go out and play well.
And what did you think of the bold prediction by their cornerback or their defensive back?
I think Coach always says we do our talk on Sundays, so I'm glad they feel that way. I'm glad they feel that way. I hope they do. I hope they do feel like they can win. I hate for them to feel like they come in here and can't win a game, so we'll see. We'll see who comes out ahead on Sunday.
Fair to say that might be talked about a little bit this week or find its way on a wall somewhere.
I'm sure, yeah. Yeah, we heard about it. I think everybody in the team's heard about it, so... It always comes down to who plays better. Well done is always better than well said, so it's been the motto of this team.
Tom, what do you know about Anthony Smith?
I didn't know who he was until we started preparing for him, so he's a young player. It's obvious guys that we've played in the past that we really respect on that team, Deshae, Troy, and Aaron Smith, and Casey, those guys aren't the ones that say it, so it's a great challenge for us, and we've had a great history with them, played some very meaningful games, and they're a great team, so really well coached, both offensively and defensively. I just hope we play well.
Do you consider the source when you hear stuff like that?
I mean, I think it's... I don't know. I don't know if we've ever come out and predicted victory or anything, and we won a lot of games. So whether you predict it or not, he's got to show up on Sunday and try to guard us and play his role and do his job, and we're going to try to make it hard on him.
What do you see, if any, differences with Mike Tomlin there? He brings a whole 4-3 background. Obviously, the ball is still there.
Yep.
Do you see any of Mike Tomlin's fingerprints on defense?
Not really. It looks to me like it's the same defense, same group of guys, same style. They blitz a lot. It's the same blitzes. It's the same style of play that they've played in the past. They always seem to play it well. And I think the players are very comfortable in their scheme. I think they have players that really fit their scheme well. And it's a challenge to run it. It's a challenge to throw it. It's a challenge to protect, to get open. It's a lot of man coverage on the outside, so we all have our work cut out for us.
Tom, what about the things over the last couple of weeks that you guys have run, obviously speaking offensively, that you know have to improve going forward?
Well, I think it's a team-wide thing, and I think we all need to focus on doing our job the best we can and not to try to correct everybody's mistakes. We all have our own mistakes to correct, and we all need to, I got to throw the ball better, make better reads, make better protection calls, lead a bit better, and I think it goes for each of us. We have to look at ourselves individually and try to make improvements within ourselves, and if we do that, I think collectively as a team, there will be improvements, and we've won these games. It's been exciting to win them. It was a great game the other night, but at the same time, you realize we made mistakes in the game that we need to correct.
A few players talked about being tired the other night. Coach put a quick halt on it over here, saying, "Well, it was midnight. It was 1 o'clock. You know, yeah. we're fine. We got a week to prepare." Everybody kind of refreshed after a day and a half. Then,
oh yeah, can't you see the bright and sunny faces here? I think it's a long season, and I think there's moments where you feel a little drained, and there's moments where you feel really reinvigorated. And going into my 8th year, I really felt like every year, okay, I got a little more figured out this year, and you just realize it's just a grind. It's every day you come in here, you're coming in to work hard and give everything you got. So when you give everything you got, and it's Monday, Tuesday morning at 4 a.m, I mean you are drained, but you find a way over the next day and a half to prepare yourself and come in here with bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to get to work. And I mean, there's no better team for us to be excited about than the Steelers and the challenges they present. So there's been a lot of excitement in our locker room. We're back home, we're playing in front of our crowd, and hopefully we play the best game we played all season.
Along that line, every team goes through what you just talked about, the long grind of a season, but how much easier is it for this group to get back their energy with what you have to shoot for? With your record the way it is, I'm not talking about perfect versus not perfect, but just such a good record and playoffs and everything down the road, how easy is it to get the energy back knowing you're playing for something?
Well, I mean, I think we're always playing for something, and whether you're 12-0 or 0-12, you have a lot of reasons to be motivated, and I think we're motivated by playing a team that presents a lot of challenges for us, and we've got to play our own style of game, understanding what they really do well and understanding what we need to do well. So it's a very motivated group we have. It's a veteran players who work hard and try to take the coaching, and we're coached very hard around here, and I really hope that we have listened to what coach has preached this week and can go out there and show it on Sunday.
Tom, our number
one in a lot of defensive categories, but particularly pass defense. What do you guys have to do to execute at your optimal level against their pass defense? That's really key for you guys.
Yeah, they play the run well. They play the pass well. I think they create disruption with their front, and they get to the quarterback and push the pocket. They got some guys who can really rush. It's a lot of man coverage on the outside, and they're on those guys tight, and got to find ways to get open. And you don't have all day. That's the hard part.
It's a little bit of a challenge.
Coach talked a lot about Ed Reed last week. What have you guys seen out of Troy Polamalu? How does he affect the Steelers' defense?
Well, he really sets a tone for them. In the times I've played against him, he always makes a huge impact on the game. He's very aggressive. And he's always focused on the ball, and he can really make a lot of plays. He's a really explosive athlete. I mean, we got to count for him on every play. So every week we're facing guys that are the best in the league, and I don't think there's too many players better than Troy.
Are you seeing more and more creative ways every week to try and bring pressure against you?
It's different. I think different teams have different styles. I mean, like, for example, Baltimore only blitzed 17 times, so it wasn't a big blitz game. They dropped a lot of guys into coverage. So every team looks at different ways to approach us, and some want to cover, some want to pressure, some want to play man, some want to play zone, and probably based on what they do well and how they think they need to stop us. And I think I know how to, defend us, but I think I know how you wouldn't defend us too. So hopefully, we'll see if they're right.
Along those lines, how do you defend you guys? Want to give away some
a chance, Mike. You got to study the film, buddy. You got to study the film.
No, but seriously, I don't know if it was because the standard was so high the first 10 games with the points and the pace that you guys were on, but the last two games do seem a little different from the passing production standpoint. From your mind, has there been a difference? Is it because of what teams are trying to do differently? What's been the deal the last couple of games with just what we're used to seeing in terms of passing?
Well, I just think we haven't been executing as well. I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, we've been playing good defensive teams that don't give you a lot of opportunities or much margin for error. So when you get those opportunities, you got to take advantage of them. So we got to play better.
Thanks, guys.
Chad Brown.
Oh, gosh, it just cracks me up. I wasn't active last week. I always have poison around my locker. I don't understand this. Okay.
Because you know the Steelers. I mean, if you look at the Steelers,
this is a tough game.
Giants and Miami.
Gosh, you know, you know those other three games better than I do. We play the Steelers this week, and they are going to be a tough test for us. They offer a lot offensively, defensively, special teams. They bring a toughness and a swagger to the field that a lot of the other teams don't. It's going to be a tough contest.
Checking of swagger.
You know, Anthony's a young guy. He's definitely an up-and-coming player. You know, he's very physical back there. I had a chance to, you know, see him play last year. As far as his comments, I've got no comment about his comments. You know, that's about it on that.
And what have you noticed from them on third down offensively, just from yesterday and maybe this morning, looking at them, that has allowed them to be successful?
Heath Evans.
Away from the glare of the media.
I don't know. I mean, maybe personally, I look at stuff, you read it, you hear it. It is what it is. I think a lot of his commentary is right. If we don't play better, I agree with him. They will beat us. If we don't get better, if I don't get better, yeah, I'll guarantee it too. They will beat us. You know, we've got to get better.
What are some of the specific things that's happened in general in the last couple of weeks that you know have to be improved going into this week and going forward beyond this week?
You know, for me, little things, whether it's finishing off a block or whether it's a special teams tackle or if it's an angle on a route, you know, as a team, listening to Coach Belichick, it's execution. Taking what they've put into place and doing it as we've practiced all week, and it'll take care of itself.
How much better is the Pittsburgh defense you saw last week? Statistically, they are better. But what do you see that's better about them than what you saw last week?
Never taking anything away from Baltimore, but they're a team. And that's when you flip on the film and you see 11 guys that seem to be moving and running all in the same direction, always on the same page, that's when you know you're going to have your hands full in a sense. And that's what you see from them down in and down out, is the fact that they're playing team defense. And that makes it very tough on the opposing offense.
Have you seen a difference in this team now that Tomlin is there versus what the Brandon Bastos?
You know, I haven't played them enough. You know, I wasn't here back when this team had previous experiences with them. So what they're doing this year is working, and they're really good at it. So I've definitely got my hands full this week.
You've seen other 3-4 teams, but what makes them so much better in that scheme? What do they do that makes them so effective?
Well, no team's the same, you know. I mean, we run 3-4 here. We see a lot of different stuff in practices. There's similarities in everything. There's game plan schemes, and I'm sure we'll see some of those. But I'm going to go back to the team and how they play. You know, you see a lot of different defenses, 4-3, 3-4, really doesn't matter. But when you get to the fact that 11 guys seem to be all on the same page the majority of the time, that makes it tough, real tough.
Junior Sayo.
What are the particular challenges of the offense, the Steelers' offense?
Well, they have a big offensive line. They have a great running back and a great quarterback that does a lot of things. And, you know, we have our hands full. So we're going to go to practice, and hopefully we can try to contain them on Sunday.
What, if anything, Junior, did you make of Anthony Smith's comments about this week's game?
We don't pay attention to that. That's not going to help us win the game.
How would it go over in this locker room if one of your guys, particularly a younger guy, said something like that?
That wouldn't happen in this locker room. It just won't happen.
Why not?
We won't allow it. We don't talk during the week. You know, what we try to do is just work every day to build tomorrow, and that's all we do.
Is there such a thing as bulletin board material, or is that something that we kind of overblow a great deal?
Oh, there definitely is. You know, and you know, obviously there's always a build up before the game, and you know that's the way to start it. But you know, there's going to be talk every week, so we're not going to pay attention to that, and we're going to try to do what we do every week, which is work. And hopefully that'll be good enough come Sunday.
His comments are built bulletin board material?
Which comments?
His comments that he made about guaranteeing a win.
Oh, it could be. But as far as what we talk about and what we do is basically our schemes and how we can go out there and defend, you know, obviously the threats that are out there, which is Ben and the rest of the boys that are going to be here on Sunday.
Well, generally, I mean, did you pay attention to a certain degree based on who it is? In other words, you consider the source of it?
I'm too old for all that. I'm not going to chase these kids. I mean, they're going to say what they want, you know. Come Sunday, all the talk is going to be between the white lines, and it always is.
What would you say is the key to slowing down? They've got so many weapons, whether it's running the ball, offensive line, Willie Parker, the passing game. What's going to be the real key for you guys slowing them down?
Well, you got to be disciplined. You know, discipline in our gaps and doing the things that we need to do, what's asked for us to do. Trying to contain Ben, you know, because he does a great job outside the pocket. He's a big quarterback, so if you think you're going to take him down with one arm, you're crazy. He has a great rapport with his receivers. You know, Hines is he's a big threat and always will be. And he can run a lot of gadgets out there. So, I mean, their offensive line is probably going to be one of the bigger offensive lines that we're going to face. And after what we showed last week, obviously we got some work to do.
Well, last week, speaking of which, there were a lot of alarms that went off, you know, after Willis McGahee's performance and Kyle Bowler made some throws. Mm-hmm. You looked at the film and studied it. What has to get better for those types of things out there, people?
We have to play better. Yeah, they played a better ball game than we did, and there was no one in this room that is exempt from what happened on Sunday. So, you know, we're going to stay humble, and we're going to be hungry come Sunday, and we'll go out there and compete and see what happens.
You guys got that extra day off. How fatigued or worn out were you physically and mentally? How much did you guys need it?
When you're 14th week into the season, there is no day off. You know, there really isn't. It's just trying to manage. You know, obviously your bodies, and, you know, we felt that it was time for us to, you know, kind of lay back, and we did that. But, you know, come today is going to be a big implementation type of day, and hopefully we can get it down where, you know, we can go out there and position ourselves on Sunday.
Junior, you were talking about discipline, you know, in the gaps. So yes. Discipline in the gaps. When you look back at the performance against the Ravens, do you feel like that discipline wasn't there, or was it there, and they just blocked you?
Well, both. You know, they just played a better game, you know, all around, whether it's discipline or, you know, going in there and playing smash-mouth football. They did a great job. Whenever you obviously rush for over 100 yards, there's something wrong. And we're humble enough to look at each other and say, you know what, we got to get better.
Hello, it's Hobbs.
I want to buy you an iPod for Christmas, man.
What's that?
You made a guarantee?
Have I made a guarantee?
You made a guarantee?
Nah.
What do you think about it? Guarantees in general.
I mean, they create big shoes. They create big shoes, and if you don't feel them, guys like y'all rip them up. So, I mean, I don't set. You know, not to say, you know, I admire it because, like I said, it's a sense of confidence and whatever it is, you know, for anybody, you know, and it's a statement. It's a statement, and you're sure of yourself when you do say that. So, you know, when you say things like that, hey. Now you have to prove it. So, you know, what he said is what he said. You know, we don't make the comments like that. And personally, I don't do that.
That's one of the things that Bill said in the press conference beforehand, saying that he hopes that they would have the confidence. And he hopes that you guys would have the confidence coming in.
Exactly. You know, that's what it is. You know, Rodney's made it clear a lot of times. You know, everyone's out to beat us. I hope we're out to beat them. You know, that's why you play the game. That's why you go out there every Sunday, Monday, and do what we do to go out there and beat the team you're playing against.
So, in a general sense. Do you guys use bulletin board material in here away from the glare of the media?
I mean, we just listen to what they say to get a sense of the mentality that they're in. You know, what are they expecting during the game? How do they feel during the game? You know, not to say necessarily is it good or bad, but this is what you should expect going into this game. Obviously, they have a sense of confidence throughout the players, throughout the coaching staff, you know, which is fine. You know, we have confidence in everything that we do, and, you know, we feel like we're going to have a great game plan. All we have to do is go execute.
With a game like this and an opponent like this, is there even a way to get more motivated no matter what they say? I mean, you're already should be
able to touch a high. You know, we're late in December. Regardless of the team, I think, you know, like you said, this only heightens that much more as far as, it, you know, being Pittsburgh. It's a great matchup, great rivalry. Throughout the years, you know, previous times, you know, it's been a battle. Last time we were there. what we have to understand is that it's just another game. You know, it's still the regular season. It's just another step to where we're trying to get to in the end, and we just have to continue to move forward.
Could you talk about Hines Ward a little bit? I mean, obviously, his pass catching is good, but his blocking is overlooked at times.
You know, not just his blocking, it's just his overall game as far as he's just a fierce competitor. You know, whatever you need him to do, he will do it. You talk about the blocking skills, you know, so many receivers in the NFL or have the perception in the NFL, receivers that are not in the NFL, think that it's all about just catching the ball, you know, being in the spotlight, this and that. Well, Hines Ward is that guy that likes to be in the spotlight, but he also likes to show up on that coach's film, too, where he's down the field giving blocks. You know, man, how did this guy, how was he able to run so far, so fast, and have a clear path? Well, Hines Ward cleared the way for that. You know, you don't see those type of things on the TV copy. You see those things on the coach's film, and that's what coaches admire about him.
Does he try and get into your head a little bit? You always see him getting up and smiling at you after he makes a catch.
I think it's just it's a way of being a competitor, letting the opponent know, you know what, you didn't get to me. As soon as you get hit, yeah, he might get hit a couple times, but he bounces right back up to let you know that you didn't affect him any. I think it's a great psychological warfare with him. You got to go out there with the same mentality that he has, that he's going to hit you in the mouth. You better be ready for it.
In terms of quarterbacks, what do you see in Ellis? What do you see in Ben Roethlisberger now in this day and age that you didn't see a couple of years ago?
Quarterback has grown. He's learned how to read coverages. Obviously, he's always been a big body. Knows how to shrug off guys and keep the play alive. Allow his receivers to go out there, use their athletic ability to free themselves up, and then just make accurate throws down the field.
So I know you don't obviously play against the defense, but when you face a team that has a defense that's ranked number one across the board, there's a lot of people talking about how great this team is. Does that inspire you guys on defense too? Should say, hey, we're a pretty good defense too. Does that fire you up even more?
I mean, yeah, you know, you get overshadowed, but, you know, the numbers are what they are. You know, obviously the numbers don't count in this game because you still have to play the game, but throughout this season they prove themselves time and time again, obviously, to get those rankings. What we have to do is understand that, you know, that has nothing to do with this defense. Let's take it for what it is, and let's go out there and play hard-nosed football.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Kevin Falk.
I get the sense that you guys are like a traveling show wherever you go. The unbeaten Patriots.
Our job is to play football. Our job not to worry about people, what they think about us, how they feel about it. Our job is to play football, man. You're welcome.
Kevin, I don't know if I've been asked, but can you talk a little bit about what Pittsburgh does blitz-wise and how tough that is to pick that up?
You know, they're a physical team. They try to confuse you a little bit, but at the same time, they just bring those guys there. You know, man on man, you got to stop them.
Do they do anything differently in their blitz package, or is it pretty much like what you see, just better guys executing?
Like I just said, they try to beat you physically and try to confuse you a little bit, but all in all, they're just trying to, you know, out-physical you.
As a running back, how big a part of that game is always it's not – you know, running the ball, catching the ball is what, you know, running backs stat-wise get known for. But how important is it to the role in your team is to get that blocking and picking up the blitz for you?
Well, if I don't pick up the blitz or if we don't pick up the blitz, time probably not won't get the ball off. So that's very important. It's like one of the most important things we have to do.
We've talked about the fact that in other defenses you played, they've had some good players and some individual players that stand out. But he said the difference with Pittsburgh is that they have 11 guys moving as one. They are one defense working together.
They're a veteran team. They got a lot of guys that have been doing the same thing for a long time on that defense. So, you know, you got to take that into consideration.
What do you, probably been asked this at least once, what do you make of Anthony Smith's guarantee?
Can't make anything of it. He said it. That's him. We can't do anything about it.
Did you know who he was before he made the comment?
Oh, of course. I knew who he was. He's starting safety, so I had no choice but to know who he was. But at the same time, you know, that was his decision to make that comment.
When you look at the running game, do you feel like you built some positive momentum coming off last week into this game?
To be honest with you, you know, the way this team is set up, it doesn't matter how you do it or when we do it. As long as it does its job at that point in time, you know, it doesn't matter. You never can tell. It can be from week to week a different situation, different scenario.
Do you feel there were some positives, though, in that?
As well as negatives, you know. So, you know, you got to take the good with the bad sometimes.
Do you feel fortunate to still be unbeaten?
I feel fortunate to be on this team, you know, guys that understand what we have to do.
Rodney Harrison.
Cole corresponded today.
Anthony Smith, have you thought even twice about his comments about guaranteeing a win?
Not at all. The game is won and lost between the lines, not in the media. So we've been in this situation before. Where guys are talking. It just doesn't matter what you say. It's about what you do.
So you can't imagine anyone in this locker room doing or saying such a thing?
No, not at all. You have to go out there and prepare. You have to work hard during the week. You have to make plays on Sunday. And that's how you try to assure yourself to get a victory. It's not about talking in the media or anything like that. So we're not about that.
Rodney, in general, is bulletin board material ever used away, maybe guys, away from the glare of the media?
What do you mean?
Do you guys talk about it? With, I mean, not mention to the media, but talk about it amongst yourselves when players make comments on it?
No, it's really no big deal. I mean, we know that each and every week everyone's gunning for us because we're gunning for them. I mean, everyone expects us to sit back and say, well, everyone's targeting you. But every time a team comes up on our schedule, heck, we're targeting them. It's not like we're just sitting on our hands not preparing for them. So I think it goes both ways. And you know, it'll be a good physical game this week, and we should have some fun.
In terms of preparing, what have you seen in the growth of Ben Roethlisberger, where he is now versus where he was?
Well, he's just making a lot more plays. I mean, he sees the coverage, he understands it, and he's playing with a lot of confidence.
Rodney, is that at all a sign of disrespect when a player makes a comment like that, like to, you know, about a team that's undefeated?
It doesn't matter. Like I said, the game is won and lost on the field, between the lines. It's not won and lost between the media, in the media, or from the fans or from the players saying whatever they say. So we don't get caught up in that. We'll see what happens on Sunday. That's all.
What's been the difference between the fourth quarter and the last 2 weeks?
Well, it's critical time. We understand that, you know, in the fourth quarter, you never want to play bad, but when you're able to play tough and smart, good physical football in the fourth quarter, I mean, that increases your chances of being successful, and that's what we're trying to focus on doing, as well as improving the red area, as well as improving the run game. So that's something that we're looking forward to doing, getting better, and just keeping it up.
What's it going to take to be able to stop their running game this week?
Just do our jobs like, you know, we know how to do it, make sure our gap responsibilities are there, and tackle. And that's the main thing, just tackling, playing aggressive Patriot football, and just getting to the ball.
That wasn't there quite last week the way you'd like it.
Pretty obvious, huh?
You talk about those tight games and your fourth quarter record, tight games of under 3 points. You have a tremendous, the team has a tremendous record. But you prepare for those situations. Just talk about how that works. You know, it's not like, you know, you get uptight about it because you're so prepared for those situations.
Well, it's no panic. I mean, we have a veteran team here, and we've been in those situations, you know, all the time that I've been here, five years. So, you know, we're well prepared for critical situations. We practice situational football, and we have a bunch of guys that believe in one another. So I think that has something to do with it, as well as a great quarterback and offense that can score and veteran players that can communicate well and make plays when they have to, and that's what we have to continue to do. Yeah, he's a good player.
I mean, in terms of physically,
he's a good player.
You're right. Wes Welker.
Everybody's doing well. You know, open up other guys. So, you know, we got to make sure that, you know, we're all doing our part and doing our thing out there.
Wes, I think with Pittsburgh, they moved Townsend, who's a starting corner, into the slot when they go to multiple defensive back packages. Have you seen a lot of that this year where they take one of their starting corners and move it into the slot?
You know, I think it just varies by team, you know, and some guys can do both and some guys just do one. And, but, you know, obviously Townsend is a complete type of corner who can do both and do a lot of different things out there.
Does it affect anything that you do?
No, I mean, it's you know, it's pretty much the same. You're going to see the same type of looks, but, you know, you got to make sure you study up on the guys and know their tendencies and make sure you're on top of everything.
Statistically speaking, Pittsburgh's number one in the NFL in a lot of categories on defense. How are they different from the team you just saw last week, which also has a very good defense?
Yeah, I mean, they're an aggressive football team, and, you know, they get after you offensively and defensively, and, you know, you got to make sure that you try and match that intensity and bring it yourself.
Wes, have teams been more physical with you guys with the wide receivers the last couple of weeks, Philadelphia and Baltimore? Have they been more physical with the line of scrimmage and just trying to bump and bang you and knock your timing off?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, a little bit, you know. I don't think so much Philadelphia, but as much as Baltimore, but, you know, yeah.
What can you do to counter that or fight through that?
Be physical off the line and make sure you win there.
What are your impressions of Tom this season, staying cool and calm in those crucial end of the game situations?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's just out there executing the plays no matter what the situation is and make sure that, you know, every time we're out there we're trying to, you know, score points and do some different things and you know, and he steps up to the challenge every time we're out there.